Brethren, we are told, we're instructed by the Bible to be vigilant, not to be ignorant, and to be aware. But at the same time, we are to be separate from this world. The message I'm going to say, or I'm going to preach to you today, is going to be something to be observant of. In case you did not notice, the environmental decline and contamination is now impacting our city and surrounding area to a notable extent. Not too long ago, some residents in a neighborhood in the city of Portland moved forward for a class action lawsuit against a newly constructed plant. The plant that processes iron ore. Some of that residue fell on the neighboring neighborhoods, and it fell on cars and on streets and everything. The plant went ahead and performed an investigation on their own. They found out there was nothing toxic. There was nothing ferrous. But at the same report, you could show the residents there had a magnet, and they put it next to the dust particles, and it showed it going to the magnet. And this was covering entire neighborhoods. At the same time, or more or less a week later, if you remember, we had some heavy rains around this area. And city officials came back and reported that they had found two or three places in the bay and the laguna where they had found flesh-eating bacteria. And they warned fishermen and swimmers not to eat the fish and not to swim for at least 2 weeks until it dissipated. And as well as most of us that we've lived here in Corpus long enough, we've seen the smog in over in the downtown area, if you noticed, especially coming from the Cal Allen or coming from the north, you can see on a tranquil day, you can see that. But now it's more, you can see it more. It's more widespread. In this recent rains, there's a sewage plant over by Greenwood and Saratoga, most of you might know. It's on the outskirts, the west side of Corpus, that it overflows every time there's a heavy rain. And it overflows into the Oso Creek, which overflows into the bay. And the last heavy rain we had, there's a neighborhood close to there, and the effluent went through the septic, the storm sewers. It came out through the storm sewers onto the streets. If you don't know, septic or the sewer lines and storm lines are supposed to be separate. So there's an investigation on that, and there's in the plans to enlarge the plant. There's also, when people talk about environment, they talk about that. But the environment is not so much environment around us. It is the environment around us, but also the civil part. You've heard mentioned about the recent uptick of arrests and people that they've taken to the hospital, and first responders have encountered people that were high on synthetic marijuana. And the numbers that the newscast brought was pretty staggering. They're picking up 20 to 30 a day. This is Corpus Christi. How about our shopping environment? The malls are in danger. Now, Amazon is giving the malls a run for their money. Sears announcing that they're closing 20 additional stores. And year to date, there's going to be since January, throughout the nation, there's been 10,000 stores that have closed. When you may have heard this, you may have not, but I don't know if you've heard what I'm going to tell you. I'm going to talk about our food. Yes, that's locally and nationally. There are certain foods that are going to be in danger of not of it being extinct. Or they're going to be so few of it that the prices are going to soar. I'm going to give you a list of food items that is going to affect. And if man does not work towards fixing it, scientists predict that in within the next 20 years or 10 to 20 years, and some, that's a debatable issue. I looked it up and I heard five, some say 20, some don't say at all. But keep this word, this chemical breakdown, its chemical name of it. It's glyphosate. Glyphosate. It's A. It's another word for Roundup. Everybody's familiar with Roundup, or most people that are with Roundup. It's the scientists have now developed in the lab that they can put a little bit of it into a corn kernel, into a cotton seed, into a sorghum seed, just a little bit of it, and plant it, and the plant will grow. But the reasoning behind it is, so when the farmer goes and plants Roundup, it kills the weeds but does not kill the plant. So that's when you go to San Antonio, you go to Chapman Ranch, you'll see beautiful rows of corn, but if you notice closely, there's no weeds in the middle. But technically, you know, you go to the rows and rows of marks, and you'll see rows and rows of weeds in it. Or Mark, you'll see Mark with the, you know, trying to de-weed it. But let's go first on the first number one list is honey, and I'm pretty sure most of you I've talked with. And it's due to colony collapse disorder. Bananas. There's a disease that they're going through in Panama, which is the largest producer of bananas. Chocolate. We're eating it faster at a faster rate than it's being produced. 70% of the world's chocolate is produced out of West Africa. Avocados. Avocados, did you know it takes 72 gallons of water to produce 1 pound of avocado? 80% of all the avocados farms are in California. You can say, well, you know, you can get avocados from Mexico. But yeah, but avocados from Mexico only are a certain number of avocados that can be produced out. Man, our populations are growing. And many of you know that there's a big water war in California. Coffee. Due to the climate change, it's affecting the coffee beans. Salmon. And a lot of reports say that the fish in general are being decimated. Wine, peanuts, maple syrup, and strawberries. All due to climate change. My sermon at Brethren is entitled Endangered. I gave you a number of food groups that you may have not known that we are endangered of losing altogether. You have heard me mention about the plight of the honeybees. Since the honeybees are kind of close to my heart, and a couple of times they were close to my neck and a couple of places too, that their numbers are being reduced at an alarming rate. A reminder is 80% of our food depends on the bees. The decline is mainly due to genetics. The effect of poison and what it does to the bees' offspring, according to the global research studies back in 2014 and again in 2017, states that there's a trend to disorder called total colony collapse, is attributing to a large part of the decline. But there are two major reasons, like if that wasn't enough. The scientists have indicated it led to this disorder. A study conducted by Mark Brown of Holloway University in London, and by the way, England has taken the forefront in trying to save the bees. And they've invested a lot of time and effort, and the scientists are really trying to help them. There's a widespread use of feeding bee colonies with high fructose corn syrup. You know, corn syrup isn't only bad for us, it's bad for the bees. And it's being used by commercial beekeepers. It weakens the immune system of the bees and makes them susceptible to parasites and diseases. The second one is the lack of diversity of wildflowers. Now, imagining yourself eating a T-bone steak 3 times a day, 7 days a week, and that's all you ate. Your body would react harshly with it. Now, keep this in mind, brother. Like many people say, well, they're only insects, and they're all, you know, it takes, they'll find flowers everywhere. There's flowers everywhere. Who's kidding that, anyway? It takes 4.5 million flowers to make 16 ounces of honey. And it takes 8 pounds of honey to make a pound of wax. So they need the honey to make the wax to house the baby bees. That gives you that idea. Now, what beekeepers do, they take, there's little over 3 million registered hives in the United States, and over, or more or less 2 million go and make the trek to California. And they go to the avocado orchards, and they go to the almond orchards. Now, when I say almond orchards, people think maybe 100 acres. No, we're talking 10,000 of acres, you know, 20,000 acres of almond trees. And they put the bees there to pollinate it. But it's the year after year thing. It's because these trees are 99% dependent on bees. Now, painted you a pretty dark picture. A pretty dark picture of what we're up to. Now I'm going to take it one step closer. Where will Christianity be in the next 20 years? Going at its present trend, that the trend of Christianity, that is, it shows a decline. There's a book been written by a letter to my anxious friends, Christian friends, written by David Gushin. A survey conducted back in 1990 and 2008. 1990 showed 86%, and 2008 showed 71%. Now, right now, proclaim that they are Christians after they were interviewed. But in 2008, these people found that there was an interesting trend, that there are many more agnostics and atheists in that survey. Right now, it's ranging at 70%. Remember, brethren, we are ambassadors. And there isn't too many ambassadors comparatively to the population. There's almost 8 billion people in the world. Let's go to Isaiah 41. And verse 10, brother. Isaiah. What did Isaiah say about the small amount of Christians back then? You know, relatively speaking, back then, there wasn't a plethora of Christians. And many of them that they did live, lived in fear. 41, verse 10 through 13. I'm going to be reading from the English Standard Version. It says, starting at verse 10, it says, God tells us, fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. God is basically saying, take my hand. Don't worry about it. Behold, all who incensed against you shall be put to shame and confounded. Those who strive against you shall be as nothing and shall perish. You shall seek those who contend with you, but you shall not find them. Those who war against you shall be as nothing at all. For I, the Lord your God, hold your right hand. It is I who say to you, fear not. I am the one who helps you. You can say, well, that was in the Old Testament, you know. Okay, let's go the other side then. Let's go to Hebrews. Hebrews 13, verse 6. This is encouraging words that was being said, because Hebrews 13, verse 6, and says, it opens with, so we can confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear. What can man do to me? In other words, saying, what can man do to me if God is with us? Pretty much what Romans 8:31 says, I think. If God is with us, who can be against us? Yes, we are a small church, and religiously, we are on the endangered list. But what they, all the statisticians and everybody that does these surveys, they don't know is God is in charge. Ephesians 2, let's go to Ephesians. Ephesians 2:19. Paul to Ephesians. Now he used a pretty good analogy on this one. Ephesians 2:19, 19 to 22. Now, therefore, you are no longer strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God. Verse 20. Having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets. Remember, those, it wasn't masses of armies he's talking about. He's talking about 12 apostles. And prophets, they were going by one by one. Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone. Now, I've talked to Mr. Smith years and years ago, the cornerstone is one of the strongest part of the building. Verse 21, in whom the whole building being joined together grows into a holy temple in the Lord. Verse 22, in whom you also are being built together for habitation of God in the Spirit. Now you can write this, you don't have to go here, but in Psalms 144 verse 12, David talks about the daughters being the cornerstone of the family. So they are talking about them being the cornerstone and the strength of the family. So we hear these things in the world that are being placed on the endangered list. Even our church. So what do? We say. Let's go to Dr. Luke. Dr. Luke, chapter 12, verse 31. It says, seek the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added to you. So do your part. Do your part in studying and being a good ambassador. That's right, brethren. God is in charge. Let him define the future. Let it, like it was said before, the early church, several families used to meet in a house. Remember Gideon? Back in Judges? He gleaned out 32,000 men and came up with 300 to beat the Midianites. Or how about David? All he had was 37. And Jesus Christ himself, he had 12 and 120 disciples. And when the 12 started being a little self-righteous, he says, you know what? I'll get stones to do what you're doing. So don't be aware of what's happening, brethren, but don't be afraid. But I will interject something. Plant wildflowers. Revelation 3, brother. Revelation 3. This is at the end time. Revelation chapter 3, verse 7 through 8. And it says, "And to the angel of the church of Philadelphia write, these things says, He who is holy, He who is true, He who has the key of David, He who opens and no one shuts, and shuts and no one opens. Verse 8, I know your works. See, I have set before you an open door, and no one can shut it. For you have a little strength, have kept my word, and have not denied my name." You notice, brethren, he says, verse 8, I know your works. So we are a small church. And with that, let's close with Dr. Luke again. Chapter 12, verse 29. Verse 29 of Dr. Luke. And says, "And seek not ye what you shall eat or what you shall drink, neither be you doubtful in mind." There's your answer. "For all these things do the nations of the world seek after, and your Father knows that you have need of these things. But rather seek you the kingdom of God, and all those things shall be added to you. Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom." Brethren, steadfast, fear God, and keep His commandments.